This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
Time is 7:45. Good morning, Anthony Reich. Day 460.
Okay, 12. Yes, unfortunately, day 460. I don't like this count that we do, but we are forced to do it because we need to continue to remember our brethren, our friends, relatives, cousins, fellow Jews, fellow Israelis who remain captive in Gaza. This war that has also been going on for 460 days now on different fronts has had an incredible impact on Israeli society, good and bad. There are things that will never ever be the way they used to be on October the 6th, 2023. There's no possible way that we can go back to some of the things that used to be. And some of the impact that we've seen has been a little unexpected, and there are some interesting things that are worth taking note of. For example, the number of Druze citizens of the Golan Heights who have applied for Israeli citizenship. Now, one of the quite noticeable things about the Druze in the Golan Heights, let's not forget that the Druze villages in the Golan Heights have always been a subject of some discussion and dilemma, disagreement even, and the status of the Druze citizens who live on the Israeli side of the border. And Israel has afforded those citizens permanent residence and full rights as citizens in Israel. They were given the opportunity to take up Israeli citizenship. The problem is, or the issue is, that most of them have not yet taken up on the Israeli citizenship. So they live there with access to education and access to medical care and access to all the other things that citizens of Israel have, except that they are not full citizens of Israel. And it has been noticeable that in recent months, there has been an increase in the number of Druze residents of the Golan Heights on the Israeli side who have actually applied for Israeli citizenship. And we also remember that their Syrian brethren, as soon as the Assad regime fell, immediately came together and requested Israel to take over control of the Syrian side of the Druze villages in the Golan Heights, something which hasn't happened. What the IDF forces have done is they've moved into the no man's land, into the zone between the two borders, and that always existed essentially as a no man's land, except for the fact that there were people also living in this no man's land area, even though it was supposed to be completely free of military forces. But now the IDF have moved in there in order to secure the safety of our border within that area. But it's just quite interesting to see that the Druze living in Israel have suddenly stood up and said, hey, maybe it is worth taking out Israeli citizenship, which affords them the right to vote in addition to the other rights that they already had, and of course to travel around the world with an Israeli passport. And apparently, more recently, that looked a more attractive proposition to them.
So interesting. What are the other changes that you're seeing to Israeli society, Anthony?
Well, I've said this a few times, and I know that other people have also said it publicly, but I think that for me, the main change has been in perception rather than in reality. I think that a lot of things that we've seen in Israeli society have been things that we've always believed about Israeli society that have been lying dormant, things that people are able and willing to do if push comes to shove. And when push came to shove, they stood up and they did it. There's so many things that we can talk about, the volunteerism, the people who went to serve in the army, those people who were even resisting service in the reserves and decided when the war broke out immediately to go in to get their uniforms out and to serve. There's so many aspects of our society that have been pleasing and which we knew were always there. But for me, the one thing that I've come to realize is the value of our young generation, the strength and the fortitude and the feeling of belonging that our younger generation have, and not only a feeling, but a willingness to actually make it count when required, to get up and to serve and to put their lives on the line and to volunteer and to help and to really, really make a difference, to stand up and to be counted and to do whatever is being required of them. And they've been incredible. Our young generation in this country have been absolutely incredible. And for me, that is the one thing that this war has brought out, which even surprised me, to the extent that they were willing and able to stand up and say, now that the country needs me, I'm turning up to serve, no matter what the price is, no matter what the danger is to my life, no matter what the impact is on my environment in which I live, I'm willing to stand up and not only do what needs to be done, but do so gladly. And I can't forget the experience that I had during the height of the war back in the end of 2023, when I was in the South and I was involved in just a food braai that was put on for soldiers coming out of Gaza and just eating food and going back into Gaza. Most of the soldiers that we met on that evening were reserve soldiers that left lives behind, families behind, existences, and they just got up, put their uniforms on, picked up their weapons and gone into the heat of Gaza, into what was an incredibly dangerous environment. And when those young men and women came out of Gaza for a few hours just to have a meal and to get a little bit of refreshment and then were going to return back to their dangerous posts in Gaza, when I had a chance to talk to some of them, I was amazed. I was absolutely amazed at how happy they were to be serving, how they didn't feel any sense of the fact that this was an obligation that was enforced upon them and that they were feeling unhappy about doing it. No, they were delighted. They were the ones who instilled me with inspiration when I thought I was the one who was there to try and help them to raise their spirits. And it was exactly the opposite that happened. I came away feeling so inspired by the attitude of these young people. And I think that that's the one standout thing for me.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. I just want to say something. When you say that this war has left Israelis changed and forever changed, can never go back, I would say that is true for world Jewry. We have all felt it. And when war broke out, so many of us, the first instinct that we had was to get on a plane and go to Israel, which is just, it's completely counterintuitive, Anthony. My children said to me, "Mom, please, stay where you are. We don't need to worry about where you are when if you're here." Right.
I can fully understand that. And, you know, obviously, not being part of the diaspora community, I have no real space to comment upon that. But I certainly have noticed a significant change in the attitude of diaspora community towards Israel. And I'm talking more about those people who were previously not so closely connected to Judaism and to Israel, rather than the people who were connected. The people who were connected just felt more connected, but their connectedness was always there. I'm talking about vast swathes of people, Jews and also non-Jews, who didn't feel any connection, who didn't really understand what this was all about, and whose attention was suddenly raised to this issue, and they were forced to think about things and how connected they felt as a result of this threat that suddenly became apparent, not only in Israel, but of course around the world.
Yeah, Anthony, just before we get to the news stories, a big, well, something that our community is really trying to process is the passing of Olga Meshwe. A friend of Israel, a woman of substance, when I think of an Aishas Chayil, she was proper. A mensch from, in everything that she did, she lived her life with integrity, principled. Just amazing. Did you know Olga?
I didn't personally know Olga, but of course I followed her efforts, and you and I exchanged a few text messages yesterday about her passing, which came as a huge shock to me. There's one thing that I would say about Olga and about the way in which she was so vocal in support of Israel and why I appreciated it so much. And that really surrounds this accusation against Israel of apartheid. And when the ANC government stands up and accuses Israel of apartheid, it almost sounds like Israel has a policy of apartheid, because apparently the ANC government, and particularly members of the ANC government, some of whom were involved in the struggle against apartheid back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, when they stand up and make the accusation of apartheid, then people around the world listen, because these are people who know what apartheid was firsthand. Right. And Olga and her father were really a voice that contradicted that, because they were also a family who knew apartheid firsthand, who understood the consequences of apartheid. But they were people who were willing to come to Israel and actually to see firsthand what this notion of apartheid is really about, and to stand up and to contradict the accusations of apartheid that have been leveled against Israel by those people who don't really know what's going on the ground. And so for that, Olga will always be a beacon of light, and no less other members of her family who've also stood up. But of course, she in particular, very eloquent as she was, and very willing to stand up and to face up to this and to argue the case against apartheid, which I think is sadly lacking, because there can be no doubt that the apartheid that Israel is being accused of has absolutely no link at all. There is no connection to the apartheid that some of us knew in South Africa back in the days before the current government took office.
Yeah. Okay, Anthony, big story. Well, I don't know if it's a big story, and I'm scared to even talk about it, because it's one of those things that you don't want to talk about it until the deal is signed, right? An Israeli TV channel has publicly revealed details of Israel's hostage negotiation or negotiating position. So what has been revealed so far?
Yeah, so of course, this doesn't mean that any deal has been signed, and there has been a lot of movement in the background. We understand that the incoming Trump administration has sent one of its envoys already in getting involved to Qatar. He's made some positive statements that the deal is almost ready to be finalized. And of course, incoming President Trump has made his famous statement once again: if a deal is not, if the hostages aren't released before I come into office, which is now only 12 days away, then all hell will break out in the Middle East, and it won't be good for Hamas or anybody else. These are the statements that were made by incoming President Trump over the last few days. And of course, there is also another little snippet that Chief of General Staff, the IDF Chief of General Staff, Herzi Halevi, has been in Jabalia. And he made a statement from Jabalia saying that the IDF will continue its operations until all hostages are freed. So now he views the IDF's role in Gaza as being one in order to facilitate the freeing of the hostages, rather than to obtain military objectives in Gaza. And I think that that was a very, very interesting comment made by Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi, saying that that the IDF will continue its operations until Hamas understood that it needed to free all hostages being held in Gaza. But let's get back to this document that was released by Israeli TV on Israel's negotiating position. I, when I first saw the headline, was horrified. I thought to myself, there's no way that a document like this should come out into the public. This should really be held behind the scenes. And I was wondering who was responsible for releasing it. And now, having read some of the details, I actually feel that there is some advantage to this going out in the public area. And I just wonder whether the government itself might not have asked for this to be released in a sort of underhand fashion. But just to go to the details of what was in the document.
Can I ask you a favor, Anthony? Is it possible for us to quickly take news and then come back to get the details from you?
I will wait.
Oh, you are. Thank you. So stay with us. We're going to get back to the Israel report, get the details of what was in this document right after news.
This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
Okay, Anthony Reich, thank you so much for staying with us. Excuse me, we were talking about if you've just joined us, Anthony has extended the Israel report this morning. Thank you so much. An Israeli TV channel has publicly revealed details of Israel's hostage negotiating position. So what has been revealed, Anthony?
So this is the Hebrew version of a document that was apparently presented to the Security Cabinet. And for me, it was interesting to read the overall objectives, the purpose of the agreement that was outlined in this document. And it says that the purpose of the agreement is the release of all Israeli hostages held in Gaza, civilians and soldiers, whether alive or not, taken at any time, in exchange for an agreed upon number of Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli prisons, and the establishment of lasting quiet leading to a permanent ceasefire, the withdrawal of Israeli forces from the Gaza Strip, and the rehabilitation of the Strip. Mm-hmm. So for me, it kind of is three main headlines. Headline number one is, of course, the release of all hostages held in Gaza, in exchange for an agreed number of Palestinian prisoners. That's headline number one. Number two is a lasting quiet leading to a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. And headline number three is the rehabilitation of the Gaza Strip. So those, I think, were very, very interesting just to see it written in black and white like that. It also talks about details of how Israel will actually withdraw from central Gaza. For example, the Netzarim corridor, which has now really been fully reinforced and is held by Israel with guard posts all the way along the corridor. It's a road that goes from east to west that has actually been tarred by Israel and is being used as a corridor for the transportation of IDF reinforcements. Apparently, Israel will withdraw from the Netzarim corridor and will fully dismantle all military outposts in that area. It also talks about Israel allowing more humanitarian aid into Gaza as soon as the deal comes into effect, and also talks about the way in which it is expected that hostages will be released. So it says, for example, that on the first day, three Israeli female hostages will be released. On the seventh day, four more female hostages, and then subsequently three hostages every 7 days, starting first of all with those who are alive. And then it says that on the seventh day, Hamas will need to provide information on the number of hostages to be released in the first humanitarian stage. And of course, then there will also be a staged release of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli prisons, and the fact that they will be deported either to Gaza or even potentially abroad, exactly the number and how it will be done. And it also talks about the post-war construction in Gaza, which apparently will include rebuilding infrastructure, clearing rubble, and there is talk about bringing in 60,000 caravans and 200,000 tents into Gaza in order to allow for people to be inhabited until the reconstruction project takes place. Now, that's quite a lot of detail and potentially information that the public should not necessarily be exposed to right now. I'm sure that listeners will have their views as to whether that information should have been kept behind the scenes or not. And as I said, my first reaction when I saw that these details had been released was that I was quite horrified, and I felt that this should be information that should be kept behind the scenes and should be used as negotiations quietly without being exposed to public knowledge and public pressure. But actually, having read the details, I just wonder whether by releasing it, that it lifts a certain amount of pressure off of the government and off of the negotiators, because there's been so much speculation about what the government is doing and what the government isn't doing, and what the Prime Minister has agreed to do and what he's held back from not being willing to do, and why his position has potentially scuppered deals that have been proposed in the past, and why he potentially is at fault for the fact that the hostages haven't been released, because he's been holding out certain lines that were not achievable, and therefore deals couldn't take place. The American administration has said in no uncertain terms that the failure of the negotiators to reach hostage release up until now falls firmly at the feet of Hamas. They are responsible for the fact that no hostage release has taken place up until now, and not the Israeli government side, despite the fact that there are groups of people within Israel who feel that Netanyahu's stance on this has been too harsh, has been too firm, and therefore has prevented hostages from being released. But I feel when I read those details that is a very fair position to be holding, and I think that it covers most of the bases that need to be covered. What do you guys think?
Anthony, thank you so much, and I'm sure that this is a conversation we will continue tomorrow. Thank you very, very much, and thank you so much for extending the report this morning. Really appreciate that. That is Anthony Reich. Thank you so much, you too. And if you would like to weigh in on that discussion, do you think that those details should have been released to the public? Do you think they should have been kept under wraps? If you think that they should have been released, why? If you think that they shouldn't, why? Get in touch with me. Let me know. Let's have the conversation. 061-895-1019 if you're in Johannesburg or in South Africa. If you're outside of South Africa, and there are a lot of you, then get in touch with +27 61 895 1019. It's 12 minutes past 8. Today is Wednesday, the 8th of January 2025, the 8th of Tevet in the year 5785. I'm Kathy Kayla, and today is day 460 of Operation Swords of Iron.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.